That's quite enough.
We haven't got to the good part yet.
There is no good part. Do you know what love means?
We're a sports show now.
Apparently.
That was... Okay, two things. I didn't know... I forgot that that song had such a long intro. And also, now we're a sports show. Because that... Well, as I was listening, I just thought, this sounds like the intro to a sports show now. Yeah. Armored Saint. That's who that was. It's... because of Sundance Film Festival, that I'm playing Armored Saint. Because while you were gone to the Sundance Film Festival, I spent a lot of time cleaning the house. And when I'm doing that kind of thing, when I'm washing dishes and cleaning stuff, if you're not home, then I play really loud stuff. That is like that. Stuff like that.
You know, you
when you're at home, I don't play that stuff. I'm very respectful of you.
I appreciate that.
But that's, listeners are getting a little glimpse into my way of life.
When I, without me to keep you in check.
That was Armored Saint.
You know, you,
that song is 20, wait, how many years old is that? This cassette is from 1984. How many years ago was that?
28.
The song's 28 years old.
You know, you didn't
the song should be married with children by now.
You know, the mortgage. You know what I didn't do? What you didn't do while I was on it?
I don't know.
Buy milk.
We had a lot of milk.
Yeah.
Now we don't have any. I used up the milk.
We have a box. We have a house full of cereal and no milk.
Well, in my defense, there was like 3 gallons of it when you left.
Yes.
And so I didn't need to buy milk. There was even some, there has even been, you've been home 2 days, and there's even been some for the past 2 days.
A little.
There just isn't any right now.
No.
So I don't know what your problem is. Like, why you're,
my problem is that there's no milk.
I'm not responsible for that. You want some milk, you can go buy some milk. You got 2 legs. Grocery store's a block and a half away from here.
It's still your fault.
This isn't Downton Abbey, and I'm not Mr. Bates.
You certainly are not.
I got
it. You're O'Brien. You're a treacherous one.
I want to be, if I'm going to be a treacherous one, I want to be Thomas, because he's mean. He's meaner than O'Brien.
Yeah, you wish you were Thomas. That ain't happening.
I think I have more in common with Mr. Carson, actually, than anyone else.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think he's basically my spirit animal, Mr. Carson.
If you took the which Downton Abbey character are you?
Yeah, I'm Mr. Carson.
Quiz online.
Yeah.
I of course am the Dowager Countess. But everybody thinks that.
I would like to be. I would also like to be the bomb throwing Irish guy.
Oh yeah. Well,
he's incendiary.
Yeah. Also hot.
He's going to pour sludge and poo and ink and
on the general.
On the general.
For the cause.
This is the first and last time we can ever talk about this.
Oh, I don't know.
No, because this is going to turn into a, you know, are you a Samantha or are you a Carrie? This is going to be that.
Okay.
This is going to turn into that. Okay, we have to never do this again.
But still, I'm sure people there. I bet you there's the Venn diagram of Linoleum Knife listeners and Downton Abbey watchers. There's a pretty healthy.
I'm sure there's an overlap.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, in terms of lame cliche.
Oh no. Yeah. But who we are? Yeah.
You'd hit it and quit it.
Right. Yes.
We're done already.
Fine.
Yeah.
And you, incidentally, are Dave White, film critic for Movies.com. And
speaking of Downton Abbey. Tea sipper.
Yes, tea sipper and contributor to KCRW's Unfictional.
That's a fact. I'm fixing to tape a new story.
Really?
For them, yeah. About the fire.
Oh.
Okay. And about our crazy drunk neighbor who interrupted our fire night.
Right.
He's not crazy. He and I have since met. And well, I'm not going to give away the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
he was drunk.
It was a story that has not yet been told.
No.
Not online, not on Facebook. Excuse me, not anywhere. And so
so we'll let you know when that is going to be.
Yeah, and it's a crazy, it's a good story.
It is a good story. I was there for a good chunk of it.
You're Alonzo Duralde. You are a film critic for The Wrap, and you are a co-presenter?
Co-host.
On What the Flick? Co-host.
Yeah.
Are you a fully fledged co-host?
Yeah. I got kicked upstairs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
I'm not just the substitute anymore.
You're one of the main quad.
I'm a regular.
You're a regular.
Yes.
Yeah. Was this officially given to you? Like, did someone say did they jump you in?
Yes, that's what
did
happened.
Ben Mankiewicz. Did Ben Mankiewicz jump you in? Like, did they kick you in the gut and
laugh now, cry later?
Yeah.
Essay.
Did Christy Lemire?
She's a ferocious
did
one.
Did she make you like go do a drive by?
She can do things with a broken bottle that will make you cry. Anyway, yes, I'm a regular on. I don't think you ever talked about what we're talking about. What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. Yes, I have been upgraded to regular status, which is nice. And I just got back from the Sundance Film Festival, as you mentioned, and later in the show I will talk about what I saw.
Talk about it now.
All right. Okay. I saw a handful of things.
I got some tea to drink.
Of varying degrees of quality. I didn't see anything bad. What I saw was from okay to really good.
Well, I'm annoyed that you got to see the Tim and Eric movie.
Arguably one of the worst things.
What? No, shut up.
All right, look. No. It's very, let me put it this way. Okay, I saw Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie, which goes online this weekend as a video on demand, so you can watch it for yourself.
But it opens in...
It opens theatrically in February.
February, yeah.
Yeah. But it's Magnolia or Magnet or whatever, so it's going to go on VOD very soon. Chris, you know, whenever I hear VOD, that means Valley of the Dolls, but, you know, that's just me. Anyway.
Dowager Countess.
Yeah, if you, you know... It's funny, I don't even usually remember that when I'm talking about the movie that I saw at Sundance. It's all right. It's basically if you already like Tim and Eric and you like their shtick and their aesthetic, then, you know, you will laugh at this movie. And if you find a little of them goes a long way, then you will feel like 90 minutes is too much of that. I mean, it's basically like six episodes of awesome show, great job, you know, strung together. I was reminded more than once of UHF, actually, because...
That doesn't sound like a bad thing to me.
It's about the two of them wind up... They lose $1 billion making a crappy movie, and they think the way they're going to make another billion is to take over this horrible, decrepit mall that is currently being run by Will Ferrell, or the character played by Will Ferrell, that has, like, a wolf in the food court. And, you know,
that's comedy.
Yeah. So it's, you know,
no, I'm serious.
Yeah.
That's comedy.
It is the Tim and Eric movie is exactly what you would think the Tim and Eric movie would be.
I can't wait. So. You should have had me to your right and Aaron to your left helping you love it.
Well, you know, that didn't, you didn't help me
to help you keep it trimmed.
You didn't
wet.
Help me love the Pootie Tang or Freddy Got Fingered. So I don't know that would have your presence would have made a difference. You're always very vocally, I'm never going to Sundance. I don't like it. I don't want to go to
I am never going to Sundance. Well, unless someone forces me to go
know,
to Sundance.
You don't know what it's like.
Pays
so
me
you,
good
you
money
might actually
to go to
have
Sundance.
A good time. You might enjoy the cold, cold weather and all the
I
snow.
Would enjoy the cold, cold weather. Yes. That is true.
And you would get to see movies like the Tim and Eric movie.
But I would have to deal with all that other stuff that you have to deal with when you go to Sundance.
You know what? I dealt with
you come home and tell me all about that stuff, and it just sounds like a nightmare.
I dealt with a lot less of it this year because I took the advice that somebody gave me, which is avoid Main Street as much as possible.
What happens on Main Street?
Main Street is where all the gifting suites set up, or a lot of them do, and it's where like all the sort of the parties are happening. It's basically, except for the Egyptian Theater and the Filmmaker Lodge, everything that's happening on Main Street has nothing to do with movies. And this time around, I pretty much just went to movies.
Are there people selling like God's Eyes and stuff?
There are stores there that do that year round. You know, yeah, it's a ski resort. You know. But no, I really just focused on the movies this time. I didn't get caught up in any of the other BS, which was nice. I didn't have to interview anybody. So it was nice.
You didn't do any work.
No, really. I saw movies and I did Sunday.
But you didn't have any deadlines you had to file for people.
Oh yeah, I did file some stuff for I did two stories for The Wrap. Did you know?
Oh, you did?
Them? Yes.
Did you get paid extra for that?
Yes.
Good. Awesome. It was worth it, you going there.
Anyway. But it's funny.
How much?
My seeing the Tim and Eric movie before you and Aaron, who are the big fans of them, reminded me of the when I was a teenager and I got to go to the finals of the World Cup in Madrid, and not like my brothers who are actual sports fans, and they're watching on TV going, okay, of all of us who could be there, why him?
Say the name the way your family says it.
Why Alonso?
Say it again.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it.
Shut up.
You know what's weird to me?
What?
You pronounce your name that way at random moments when you're talking to, like, a variety of people.
I usually only say it that way to people who I think Spanish is their first language.
You say it that way when you call Sonia at Irv's and order in burgers.
Because she calls me, hello, Alonso. You know, she says it that way too, so.
Yeah, but that's just her Korean.
I know, but if I said Alonso, it might not click as well. So I
call you Alonso to her all the time.
I suppose, but it just, you know, I just say it the way she says it. I'm just trying to accommodate here.
It's weird. Sometimes on the phone with like telemarketers or whatever, you'll say, Alonso, Alonso. And I just think it's funny.
When do I talk to telemarketers on the phone?
Not telemarketers, but, you know, random people calling you on the phone from businesses and things. Like Time Warner Cable calls you and asks you questions about whatever. And you're like, this is Alonso Durant.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, I only...
I've heard you do it.
Okay, again, only if it sounds like the person on the other end of the line, you know, was born in Mexico or something and would have an easier time of it. I'm just trying to accommodate, like I said.
Keeping it real for La Raza.
Yes. El Cucuy. Also at Sundance, I saw Hello, I Must Be Going, which is a new film.
I don't know what that is.
Todd Loiseau, who was, remember in High Fidelity, the one who's not John Cusack and not Jack Black, the other guy?
The short, little, skinny, bald dude?
Yes.
Okay.
His name is Todd Loiseau. He is a filmmaker. He did a short film called The 5-Minute Hamlet, I think, that I screened at the USA Film Festival back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And he did that movie Love, Liza with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Nope.
Anyway, this is his second feature. It stars Melanie Lynskey from Heavenly Creatures and a whole bunch of stuff since then as a depressed sort of 30-something divorcee who's moved back in with her parents and who sort of gets out of her funk by having an affair with a 19-year-old dude. And it's really charming and funny, and I liked it a lot, although I will grant it's the kind of movie that I need to see again at sea level before I make my final judgment, because sometimes, you know, you're at Sundance and you see certain kind of movies, you think, oh, that's great, and then you see it again in regular circumstances, you're like, oh, okay, maybe not. But I really like Melanie Lynskey, and it was great to see her play a lead. Blythe Danner plays her mother, and I always adore her, and she gets some juicy moments, and I was thinking, you know, if the right person picks up this movie, they could actually, like, I could see somebody mounting an Oscar campaign for Blythe Danner, because she's...
When's this movie coming out?
I don't know. I don't even know that it's been picked up yet. But she's the kind of actress who's been around for ages, and she's always awesome.
She was an adult woman when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, has never...
How old does she know?
Oh, I don't know. But, like, it's never really gotten her due, you know, and so I could see, like, that could work, you know. And this is the kind of performance that has she has a couple of the big moments, you know, that would, you know, they would work for that sort of thing. I saw Celeste and Jesse Forever, which Sony Classics picked up, the Rashida Jones, Andy Samberg rom-com. I guess it's a rom-com, I don't know. They play a married couple who have, you know, they've been together like since they were teenagers, and they're trying to remain best friends despite the fact that they are in the process of getting divorced.
A divorce com.
I thought the first half was really funny and charming. The two of them have really great chemistry. When it starts sort of getting more serious and they're trying to figure out what they're doing with their lives and blah blah blah, I thought it got a little whiny.
I really don't want Andy Samberg emoting about what he's going to do with his life.
Samberg is pretty good. I mean, he handles the dramatic stuff.
I think he's really funny.
He is very funny.
I don't want to see anything else from him. I've got him in a box.
Well, open that box. Make it open the box. No, I think he's really good in this. And she's terrific. I wish I liked the movie more, but when I wrote about it for the wrap, I was saying that I predicted that, one, it would get picked up, and two, whoever picks it up will probably maybe send it back to the editing room, which I hope they do. We'll see if that...
They might not.
They might not.
They think it's beautiful as
they
it
might,
is.
They might love it just the way it are. So, you know. And then the other narrative film I saw was Robot and Frank, which stars Frank Langella as... Robot? There were a couple more. Frank Langella... No, he's not the robot. Peter Sarsgaard is the voice of the robot, though. Frank Langella...
Is it a real robot?
It's a guy in a robot costume, I'm pretty sure. Frank Langella plays... it's set in the near future, and he plays an older man who's kind of losing his memory. And so his son, James Marsden, who's tired of having to drive 5 hours each way to, like, check in on his dad and see how things are going, gets him this healthcare robot. And Frank and the robot sort of wind up bonding. And Frank, it turns out, used to be a cat burglar, and he teaches the robot, like, how to pick locks and avoid security cameras and stuff. You know, it's kind of gimmicky, and it doesn't have a whole lot on the table, but it's fun. I thought it was, it's charming. Langella's really good. There's a really good cast. Susan Sarandon's in it, Liv Tyler. So it's, you know, it's nice. It's a nice film. And then I saw a film called The First Time with Jonathan Kasdan, son of Lawrence, brother of Jake, wrote and directed, teen losing your virginity comedy, and it's got a certain amount of charm to it. The teenagers really talk like screenwriters.
Good. Real teenagers talk like idiots.
I know.
In movies, they should talk like witty screenwriters.
Well, then you will love this, because that's good. Exactly what they do. I really like the lead gal, Britt Robertson, who has been on two TV shows that I have not watched. Life Unexpected. And
whatever.
The Secret Circle.
Nope.
But she's really good in this. In fact, I was reminded more than once of the late Adrian Shelley in some of the early Hal Hartley movies. So, it's a sweet enough movie. I could see it getting picked up. I don't know if it will or not. We'll see what happens. I feel like your audio levels are huger than mine this week. I don't know what's going on with that, if I can fix that. But anyway.
I'm gigantic.
You're huge. That's probably my fault for not being... I don't think I'm talking close enough to the mic. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I saw some interesting documentaries. My least favorite was probably Eugene Gerecki's The House I Live In.
What's that?
It's about the drug war in America and how it's a total waste
of time. Oh, you were telling
time
me
and money.
Earlier,
and
yeah.
He makes an interesting point towards the end that it's basically the Holocaust in slow motion.
Yeah.
And kind of relates it to how Holocausts work. And He has a very valid point about what the drug culture has done, particularly to the African American community. But it's kind of too big a topic to take on, at least the way he does it, and so it winds up feeling sort of, you know, like it should have been some big Ken Burns thing or something. And then for what he actually does, it feels like it's too long because he repeats himself a lot. So I don't know. I was neither here nor there with it. But there's some really...
I'm bored just by listening to you talk about
there
it.
There are some interesting points in it nonetheless. I liked Kirby Dick's The Invisible War about sexual assaults in the military and the culture that allows them to happen and not really get prosecuted. And that's a movie that I think could really... make a change in policy and in how these things get handled. You know, it's already kind of drumming up a lot of interest at the screening that I was at. Barbara Boxer was there and a couple other members of Congress and Gavin Newsom and Mary J. Blige, who was going to be writing a closing credit song for it. I can't believe you
didn't say hello to her.
Oh, come on. You're Mr. I Never Talk to the Celebrities.
Yes, but it's Mary J. Blige.
Well, it wasn't like I was ever standing near her. It was like the movie was about to start. They were introducing the people in the audience, and she was like at the other end of the theater, like 8 rows ahead of me, and she got up and waved. So I wasn't going to go bounding over and Mary J. Yeah, so.
You should have gone up to her and should have said, Mary J., you've grown so much.
Thank you, Oprah.
You've really come into your own. You've been going through some changes.
And I can do bad all by myself.
And now. Every time she pops up in the public eye, it's this whole rap about, like, I'm not who I was. Like, how many personalities have you shuffled through by this point?
She's the Black Madonna.
She's fantastic.
It's funny though. I mean, I thought Invisible War was really powerful, and it's a real gut punch of a movie. But I love B. Ruby Rich because I run into her at the queer brunch, and we're talking about the movie, and she's like, "Yeah, it was definitely powerful and stuff." And she's, but why were all those women white? Why is every woman interviewed in this movie white? I mean, think about the racial makeup of the military. Why were there no voices of color? I was like,
interesting.
Oh man, B. Ruby Rich, you are totally right. That is, yes, that is a flaw with this film. But nonetheless, I think it's well done, and I think that it's going to have an impact on people. My favorite movie of the festival, bar none, was a documentary called How to Survive a Plague. And it's kind of a history of ACT UP, and it really sort of connects the dots from what ACT UP did in the 80s and the pressure they put on the NIH and other government agencies directly led to the discovery of protease inhibitors and the complete shift in how AIDS affected, people around the world, but obviously mainly in the United States. And what was really cool about it was, you know, ACT UP, if you've ever seen any of the old videos and stuff, they documented themselves like crazy.
Oh, did they?
Oh yeah, you remember like Stop the Church?
And no, I remember the Church.
You know, they filmed their meetings, they filmed their actions.
They filmed their meetings?
Oh yeah. And they filmed with 3 cameras. So the director of this one actually had all this footage that he could sort of intercut and like he had a wealth of material.
The most organized of all communities.
They make the Japanese look like the Greeks. How was that not offensive? Quoting 30 Rock. So they had the really amazing archival stuff to work with, and then there were, you know, really good interviews for the contemporary stuff. And I was so moved and stirred up by it. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm sort of from that era and was marginally involved with that kind of stuff. So, you know, it definitely pushed a lot of my buttons. But, you know, it got a standing ovation. People really loved it. And, I mean, there's an amazing part where they talk about how towards the end of the 80s, you know, because the whole thing about ACT UP is how it was non-hierarchical. So, of course, like...
It was all mic check.
There was a lot of yelling and a lot of there was infighting breaking out, and there's this one meeting and like Larry Kramer is sitting up at the front and people are like kind of bitching at each other and like, well, you did the blah 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 and you're sending these anonymous letters and blah, 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 blah. and Kramer is just like watching all this and he finally just yells, "Plague!"
Who said this?
Larry Kramer.
Oh, I see.
And like just silences the room and he's just like, "We are in the middle of a plague," and like just like goes off on this tear of like, you people need to stop attacking each other and go after like the ones who are killing us, and da da da. And it was just like, it's you know, you still feel it in your spine the way he's
a boss.
Yeah, yeah. You do not cross Mr. Kramer. So that was
Sundance.
That was what a scene.
Sounds boring. All of it.
You would have enjoyed it, I think. You know, saw a lot of people that I know, and it's a lot of people that live in Los Angeles that I never see here, but I see them there. You know, like John Barrett, who literally lives a block away from us. Never see him here.
Does he live a block away from us?
Yeah. My former colleague at The Advocate, who now is the LA bureau chief for Entertainment Weekly. It was nice. I'm glad, you know, I was there just long enough. I mean, another day would have been nice because I was asked to be on a panel that was happening on Monday, but I couldn't do it because I was already leaving. I didn't get to see the Ira Sachs movie. I think it's called Keep the Lights On. But I heard that was, you know, very interesting and rather controversial. But you'll be seeing it at a lot of the gay festivals this summer, I'm sure. And all the music in it, by the way, is by Arthur Russell.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, yeah, nice. Alrighty, so what else happened last week?
I went to see Underworld Awakening. You didn't.
I did not. Tell us all about Underworld Awakening.
First, they showed a trailer for the Resident Evil part whatever that's coming out in September.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think, I wish it was the future so that I could just be here watching that instead. Because what that would mean is that I would be watching a terrible franchise that I hate somewhat less than the Underworld franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And it would mean that I have already sat through Underworld Awakening without having to actually experience it.
And would have ideally already forgotten it by this point.
It would mean that I would be watching something with Michelle Rodriguez in it.
Ooh.
And I think I said this once before, but I'll say it again. It would not be Underworld.
Right.
Yeah.
Do they even have Scott Speedman anymore?
No.
Oh, man.
What are you talking about? They have a rotating cast of respectable character actors.
Is Michael Sheen still in it?
Getting a check. No, Stephen Ray.
Stephen Ray. This time.
Who gets to say things like, find her. Destroy her.
And bring me a sandwich.
Yeah. It's. I don't get tons of comments on my reviews at movies.com. But this one got like 24 comments from each person, every single one of them, thinks that I have my head inside my own butt.
I know these movies are popular, but I never think
think of anything else original to say, so they just repeat what the other commenters say.
Right.
I find it weird this movie's. Do you know what is about the underworld?
It's vampires and werewolves. That's all I know.
Fighting werewolves. Mm. That's it.
That's it.
And it's in a. It's inside a computer. It's all happening inside a computer. I mean, not the plot. The plot doesn't say this is all happening in a computer.
Oh, but
it just is all happening inside a computer. And so, your criticism of some digital effects that feel flat and not real and don't make you feel like you're there. They make you feel like you're looking at a cartoon on a computer.
Right. There's no tangible nature to it.
Yeah. And that's what this whole movie is. Yeah. I am told by fans of this franchise, I don't understand why they're fans, that this is the best one. But it's not.
Now,
it's
do you mean
as
the people
dumb and
commenting
terrible
on your page or someone you actually
the
know.
People on Facebook who generally like what I do.
I see.
And aren't out to tell me that I've got my head in my butt.
I see.
This
is the best of the Underworld?
They are. Yeah, this one is the best.
Uh-huh. That's great.
I've seen all of them. I've seen all the Underworld movies. None of them are the best. They're all the terriblest. It's a four-way tie for... That's what it is. And Kate Beckinsale is the perfect star for these movies. She wasn't in the third one, but... there was like a shot of her at the end. She's the perfect star for these because she gives nothing ever. Like, she's the least, I don't know what the right word is, she's the least expressive human being in films right now. I know we complained about her last week, but let's complain about her some
more. Yes, because she's got two movies in the top three.
The worst, you know? So, and yeah, she's gorgeous.
I'm going to change chairs.
She's
really uncomfortable.
Totally beautiful and looks amazing in the skin tight, you know, cat suit, and you know, can be rotated in the air on wires effectively.
With aplomb.
That's it. That is all she brings. There is nothing else. You know, they digitally blued up her eyes. It's just, I don't understand. And the people who like it, they say things to me like, well, I just like action. And I just, and I say
like
to them.
Like, that excuses everything
else.
No.
And I say to them, what? And I don't?
Yeah.
You know, like, if you are paying attention to a person who writes about film.
Week in and week
you
out.
You will learn kind of what they're about.
Yeah.
And here's what I'm about. Be awesome. I don't care what genre you are. I like them all. I like them all. I'll watch DOA : Dead or Alive just for the volleyball. Like, if you're going to play volleyball, play real cool volleyball, like in DOA : Dead or Alive. A horrible movie.
Yes.
A terrible movie. A piece of crap movie. But okay, volleyball. And so,
and you know what? What's galling is that, you know, the people who want to see an action movie, you know, with a hot chick would rather see the stupid, you know, new Underworld movie and give a cinema score of a D- to Haywire.
Oh, did Haywire get a D-?
Oh, yeah.
Cinema score? Why? What's up with that?
Because people are morons.
What did they dislike about
Haywire? I don't know.
Did they not? Was it confusing? I didn't think it was. Was it confusing to people?
I don't know.
Do we know what the reasons are for this?
You don't have
because
to.
Because.
You don't fill. When you fill out the card, you just give a grade. It doesn't.
Is it because there are long stretches where no one talks?
Maybe. I don't know what it is. But people are idiots because Haywire was terrific and really exciting and a really fun action movie. But, you know, it's tanking and
I'm confused by that.
Underworld is a big hit.
I'm confused by that.
I think there's some sort of MMA curse on movies. Like nobody wanted to see Warrior. Yeah. No one's going to see Haywire. Like that one specific corner of the sports world is just not translating to film somehow.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me because Haywire's rad.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of bone-crunching violence and action in
it. And she's really doing it.
And she's really doing it. Like, what could you ask for that would be better than that? Fake stuff?
Apparently.
Because that's what's in Underworld.
Yeah.
None of it's really happening.
No.
In Underworld. It's all just like...
Matrix-y kind of...
Fake, like, cartoon werewolves chasing nobody. I'm my mind is confused about all of this right now. But yeah, I like all the genres of film. Mm. I like them. I like war movies. I like action movies. I like violent stuff. I like a romantic comedy that doesn't, you know, make me feel like I had to just put my scrotum in a safe and lock it. You know, I like it all. I like it all. I like, you know, I like everything. And what I love about the people who get all up in your face, they're like, well, you just hate fun.
Oh yeah, it wasn't an Oscar winning drama.
It wasn't an Oscar winning drama.
Guess what? I hate most Oscar winning dramas.
I think it's funny because the go to thing is you just like it to be an Academy Award movie. I'm like, no.
People are so weird about that. I remember one time I made a comment. There was some movie I reviewed recently on What the Flick where I said, oh well, for once Paul Bettany isn't a good movie.
Right. Well, he was in an Academy Award winning Best Picture, so I guess you're wrong. You know, it's like, yeah, he was
what
in a beautiful.
He
was in A Beautiful Mind, which was a stupid movie.
That was a terrible.
So, you know, but somehow there are morons out there that think that the imprimatur of an Academy Award means that it's good.
Means that they're right, and it means that you're a snoot if you don't like something that
would never be nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, you can't win because I also, you know, the same people who are all like, oh, you don't like, and you want everything to be Oscar. When I talked about not liking Charlie Wilson's War,
right?
Oh, it was like I had urinated on their mother's grave. Like, how very dare I? Because, you know, this was such an important film and blah, 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 blah.
No,
blah,
it wasn't.
Like, no, it was junk. So people all need to line up so I can punch them in the face. At least not our lovely listeners, but the jerks who comment on YouTube and elsewhere.
Can I punch them in the face first?
Well, we'll flip for it.
Okay. I, Underworld is crap. All of them, including this new one.
But Haywire.
And I'm right. Haywire's great. We already talked about Haywire.
No, we didn't.
Oh, we didn't? Haywire's great.
This is where we talk
about Haywire. We got to hurry up and finish this up, too, because you spent way too much time talking about Sundance. And the auto people are going to call here any minute and make us leave. And I got to go move the car out of its space.
We have plenty of time for all those things.
25 minutes.
Fine.
We have 25 minutes. Right. We have to pick up the pace.
You were goading me.
So the other thing that I saw that you didn't.
Well, wait. We haven't talked about Haywire yet.
I thought we just did.
No. I mean, in passing, MMA artist Gina Carano, not an actress, and not an actress in this necessarily, but in a way that doesn't really
matter.
She's
kind of a robot. I'm fine with that.
It's fine, yeah. It kind of fits the character. She's, you know, a government-hired assassin. And yeah, she whoops the tar out of Channing Tatum and Michael Fassbender and Ewan McGregor. It's a lot of fun. And it's written by the guy who did The Limey, Lem Dobbs, you know, for Soderbergh. And so it has that same kind of late 60s, early 70s, you know, Get Carter, Point Break kind of, or Point Blank kind of vibe. And, you know, long stretches where nobody's talking and it's just people being chased and hiding and hitting and whatever. I liked it a lot. I had a really good time.
Me too. I have nothing else to say.
Okay, fine.
It's one of his sort of 60s, 70s influenced
thrillers
where, you know, the heroes they're not Superman, you know. She even isn't Superman.
Right.
And so you they're these flawed, you know, regular people, essentially, who have to, you know, go off and participate in this extraordinary situation.
Right.
And I prefer that. You know, I like those old, like, Charles Bronson movies where, you know,
he can be hurt.
He can be hurt. Yeah. And so it's not a meaningful movie, I don't think. I don't think it has.
No, and I don't think it's meant to be
any sort of lasting. It's the kind of throwaway action film that we used to get a lot of, you know, when you and I were little kids.
Right.
But that were rough.
Yeah.
They were rough movies. And the kind of action films we get now are not always that rough. They're very sort of slick and tidy and they're flashy and they've got sarcastic attitudes.
Right.
But they don't have a sort of visceral punch.
No.
And this does.
Yeah, this has genuine menace.
Great, yeah. And you feel it when the people are fighting.
Yes.
And there's still that thing about a man punching a woman in the face that is like, it makes you
it's shocking,
flinch. Yeah, yeah, and that happens a lot.
Yeah, this has some of the like most knockdown like man on woman fighting I've seen maybe since Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Right.
I mean, just
that was my tagline on on the movies I wrote. Faster Gina Carano Kill Kill.
Funny.
Not that funny.
Yeah.
Just, you know. Easy.
Okay.
It was easy. Yeah.
The other movie that we both saw was Frederick Wiseman's Crazy Horse.
Boobs. Tits Disneyland is what they should have called it. Can I say that word and it still be clean?
I think so.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Tits.
So Frederick Wiseman, legendary documentarian, has, you know, brought his camera into hospitals and prisons and department stores and housing projects, and lately has been doing what Dave calls a series of movies about, you know, the human body and what it can do. So he did a film about the corps de ballet of the Paris Opera, and then his last film was Boxing Gym. And now it's about this legendary chic nude nightclub in Paris.
The French love things that are chic.
Yes.
I'm not sure, like, is there an active working definition of chic? Is it a sort of like
stylish?
Effortless elegance? Is that what we're talking about here? You know, an intuitive knowing of how to be stylish? Are we going to define chic that way?
I guess, yeah. That sounds like a good one.
A cool
Mrs. Vreeland.
Disco band of the late 70s.
Yeah, I would say effortless elegance. It sounds like a good definition. I wouldn't necessarily say that's what the show is that he's documenting. But it's, you know, it is definitely it seems classier than a lot of the, you know, what the American idea of going to a nightclub to see, you know, unclad women would be.
This, well, first this seems of all, classier than let's that. Go back to what I said earlier about the breasts. Mm-hmm. All of them are real in this movie.
Yes, they are indeed.
And they're dancers. These are dancers, dancer ladies.
Like trained dancers.
Stripper ladies, they're dancer ladies. Yeah. And so they've got, you know, those. It's important that we are talking about breasts right now because that's all you see for the entire 2 hours of this movie.
Practically.
Nonstop naked women.
And production meetings.
Yeah. It's nonstop boobs and full frontal everything.
Yeah.
And butts. And so you start to notice this, there's a quality to the breasts in this film that they're all real. They're not. None of them are fake. I bet they wouldn't even hire a fake.
No.
Pair. You know.
They're those hard roundies that you get here.
Yeah. I bet you wouldn't get it. So the. No, his documentaries are fascinating. They're always really fun to watch because he doesn't tell you what to think. I mean, in the editing room, of course, you're always being told sort of what to think.
But yeah, he doesn't narrate. There's no score.
He's not a personality in his own movie.
No, not at all. And so
in the sense of what we know now,
he's not Michael
Morgan
Moore.
Spurlock, you know, or yeah. Michael Moore.
He plants the camera and like gets these long takes and just sort of like allows things to transpire. And yeah, obviously in the editing room, he does his molding, but for the most part, it's very fly on the wall. It's not cinema verite because people misuse that term a lot. Actual cinema verite means that you can see the lights and the boom mic and, you know, the script girl like that. That's what cinema verite is, where it's full on, like there's no fourth wall whatsoever.
Right.
But this is definitely, you know, like very rigorously pure kind of documentary style. And I don't know that this is the most interesting topic that he's ever gone after, but it's still compelling.
It's going to get the biggest audience that he's had in years, so I bet.
I don't know.
Nudity.
But people who just...
Naked ladies.
But people who just want to see bazooms, they have the internet for that. I mean... Are they going to watch a 2-hour documentary, you know, that's mostly in French, just for the occasional, like, sort of artistic, you know, naked ladies on a trapeze?
Yes.
I don't know.
It'll make more money than anything he's done in the past 20 years.
Maybe, but it's not going to be like a giant, it's not going to be a huge hit.
No. I'm not saying that's going to be a hit.
More people are going to want to see it than Saw.
I'm just saying it's going to
be. Than Saw Belfast, Maine. Yeah, I suppose.
Or,
so.
You know. Public. State legislature.
Public housing. Did you really make one called state legislature?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, I thought you were making that up.
No.
Okay.
He just went into a legislature meetings.
Wow.
And I love that all of his documentaries are just called the thing that they are. You know.
Yeah, he did The Store, which is about the flagship.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, it's shot in Dallas. It's about the flagship Neiman Marcus store. I actually put it in my Christmas book because it's set entirely like during the
Christmas 1982.
Yeah, November and December of 1982. So and it's just the shots of like the portrait studio and the jewelry people, and it's just so Dallas.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I definitely
and it's available.
It.
Like you can go to his website.
Yeah, Zippora Films. Z I p p o r a.
You can buy them.
Yeah,
they're expensive, but you can buy them.
Yeah, So yeah. So this is
none of them are on Netflix. Almost none. I don't think. Well, either almost none of them or none of them at all.
Well, because he distributes his own stuff, you know. Right. So I'm sure.
It sucks though. They should be on Netflix.
It would be nice. Yeah. So what's kind of interesting about this one is that because it winds up doing things you don't usually get in a Wiseman movie because they're just happening organically. So like, because it's a nightclub where people are performing, there is music in this movie where oftentimes there is not music in his movies. Because the people behind the scenes are putting together a new show and that's actually something that people in Paris care about, they're being interviewed by the local media. So there are interviews in this movie because his camera is there while they're being interviewed by somebody else. So it's sort of accidentally a more traditional documentary than Wiseman generally makes. My big disappointment was that you don't really ever hear from the dancers themselves, about
I like the part where they're all sitting backstage laughing about the
Russian ballet bloopers.
The bloopers in the Russian ballet.
Yeah, yeah. That's I like that too.
But people falling on their ass and stuff. Right. The Russian ballet.
I would have liked to have heard more of their stories and their, you know, what the experience is like for them and you know, how do they deal with, you know, aging or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of issues that would have been interesting to hear from about, and you don't really get that. Okay, the other movie this week, which I did not see and you did, was Red Tails.
About the Tuskegee Airmen of World War II. A squadron of African-American pilots who were mostly sidelined and then who had to go in and do stuff, had to go in and, like, go on, you know, bomber escort missions. And they did, you know, they wound up doing a whole lot of very, you know, heroic kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. Even though there were people in the military
who didn't want them in the military, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and it's a mixed bag as a movie. And again, the commenters on movies.com have declared me racist.
Well, you are.
For not, be that as it may.
You're a total racist. Right? Or you would have loved Red Tails, clearly.
Look, at least I don't deny the Holocaust.
I knew that was going to happen. I knew you were going to go there.
We're going to start throwing around made up stuff. it's a little of good and a little of not. And it's very exciting when they're fighting in the planes. It's very, very Star Wars because it's George Lucas is behind this whole thing.
Is it one of those true story movies where it's like, where it's broccoli?
No.
Okay.
Stop making that noise, whatever it is you're doing.
I know. I understand what your rabid gesticulating meant. I didn't have to say it.
Well, you kept doing it.
No, I didn't.
Kept making the weird.
I didn't.
Noise. Ugh, yeah. So anyway,
weird noise.
You're doing it again. Throw that thing away. Whatever it is that you're messing with, toss it away. I'm gonna hit you.
Oh, you try it.
Put it in the trash.
I'm gonna put it. You hit me, and I'm gonna put that on the podcast.
We will not continue this podcast until you
see.
Get rid of
we
that.
We will see what happens then. You big racist.
Are you done interrupting the podcast with your little toy? Dang. So, what was I even talking about? Oh, Red Tails. It's great when they're in the air. It's great when they're flying. It's great when they're, you know, battling the Death Star. But then they get down on the ground and they start talking. And I don't know. Aaron Magruder co-wrote the script. I don't know.
Apparently, a lot of people worked on this script over the years.
Boondocks.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool and funny. But you can kind of feel like if he was in that script, some of his. Like, if he was in that script, then there were some spiky, rough edges in that script that got sanded down. Mm-hmm. Because it became a very, very, very sort of like almost a 1940s feeling film about, you know, these men might have some problems occasionally, but they are heroes. And they were. But, you know, I'm a grown-up human being. I'm an adult, and I can understand human frailty and
people know, can be more than one thing.
People
at the
can
same
be
time.
More than one thing at the same time. Yeah. And so. The movie didn't allow them to do that. It didn't have a very good ear for the way people spoke in the 40s either, which was very different from the way we speak now. And it just, you know, a little corny, you know, Terrence Howard is okay. He seems to bring a sort of very modern sensibility to the movie, which I don't know that is. It doesn't feel. It feels inappropriate.
That's so many period pieces.
Cuba Gooding Jr. doesn't do much except chomp on a pipe. Mm-hmm. He's always got that pipe in his mouth. It's like his gravitas pipe, you know. But yeah, it's like, and there was, you know, there have been people who said that the Terrence Coward character was actually sort of a bold, you know, pushy kind of guy. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm sure he was. Obviously, there were people like that. You know, I'm sure there were African-American people at the time who were bold about, you know, their demands and their needs to have a real, you know, equal life. But at the same time, there's a context,
right?
You know, a historical context that those real life people operated in. And those eyes and ears had never seen a civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence Howard has known nothing except that. And so I just got the feeling watching him that he brought a very sort of post, you know, not post-racial, but post-struggle sort of attitude toward right. to his performance. And even just by saying that, people were on me for saying, like, well, that's how that guy really was. You know, like, all right, okay.
Yeah, because everybody who comments at movies.com is an expert real Tuskegee
era. Here I am talking about comments for two movies in a row, but it's because I was directed to them.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, normally, again, I ignore them, and I only bring them up when someone comes to me and says, you need to go check out those comments, because they're going crazy on you right now. And Gray was the one that told me. She's like, oh, man. She goes, you and I are both racist right now, according to the people on movies.com. So, yeah, it's like it's annoying when you look at the star rating and you see 2.5 and you think, hey, he's terrible. Like, you don't read the review.
Oh, God forbid.
You know, or you pick out keywords in the review and you just think, okay, well, that's I've scanned it. There's no reading comprehension going on anyone's part. And so, yeah, it's fine. It's good that it exists.
Sure.
Just because a lot of people don't even know that these guys even existed.
Yeah, I know.
You know, if you watch movies about World War II, you would think that there were no black people fighting in World War II. You know, except, you know, if you watched, you know, Miracle at St.
Anna.
Whatever it was, that Spike Lee movie.
Yeah. Which was not very good.
Or the occasional, you know, contemporary film that has a black soldier. Somehow miraculously, you know.
Yeah, Jim Brown in The Dirty Dozen or whatever.
Yeah. So, you know, it's that sort of, there are really good moments with the airmen when they, you know, one of them gets put in a POW camp and there's a real, it's the kid from 90210, in fact.
Blandon.
Yeah. He gets put in a POW camp and there's a really interesting twist to him being in the POW camp. There's some interesting, you know, bits about like officers clubs and how they, you know, they wouldn't let black officers in.
Oh, right,
you know, that was fascinating stuff. But again, it was a hit and miss on the ground. It was great in the air, not so great.
I don't know if it's because of people who are inclined to scream racism or whatever, but I think a lot of movies get that wrong in period pieces. Like if you have a movie that's set in the 50s and you have a sort of token black character,
right?
It's pretending that like segregation never happened.
I know.
In the pursuit of making it look inclusive to modern audiences, but it's like, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, that's why I like in a movie like My Dog Skip. At least they acknowledge the reality of what's going on while also having a prominent African American
character. I like that we're talking about My Dog Skip right now.
Well, it's because it actually did this thing right. Movie. You know, it is a good movie.
My Dog Skip was such a good movie.
all right, we should wrap it up because we have things
things
to do. My DVD pick this week is a movie that I saw at Sundance last year and that is now on DVD. It's a documentary called Shut Up Little Man, about the zine phenomenon of the 90s with these two guys who moved from the Midwest to San Francisco. They had neighbors who argued all night, so they started tape recording them. And the tape recordings and the transcripts went viral and spawned, you know, comic books and theater pieces and all kinds of things. And it's a kind of cool glimpse at the last gasp of how things went viral before there was an internet, where you actually had to do it all analog and it took a long time and involved the mail. But it's a really, really funny and sad and interesting documentary. I highly recommend it.
And my DVD recommendation is nothing. You should go to movies.com this week and look at Gray Drake's and my piece called Critics Corner, where we tell you to watch this, not that, like eat this, not that.
Right.
And
those are all DVD suggestions?
Theatrical and DVD.
Okay.
Currently in theaters or brand new on DVD, stuff that is terrible or at least that we found problematic and that you should and your other choices. Gotcha. Swap outs.
Okay, I'll
go do that.
You'll see lots
of recommendations.
I'll post a link to that on the Linoleum Knife Facebook page. So yes, this brings us to the end of another episode. You can drop us a line. I forgot to check the mail again. Although last time when I did forget to check the mail, we didn't have any. So get
like,
on it, people.
Y'all don't like it.
You can send us questions, comments, or anything else at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook at the Linoleum Knife Podcast page. Follow us at Twitter at linoleumcast. You can check into us on Get Glue. I think we're still listed as a TV show, but we're on there nonetheless. And
Get Glue just wants us to be a TV show.
I guess. They're encouraging us to go the extra mile.
To live our dream.
Yeah. And I want to thank all the other podcasts out there. The Popcorn Mafia with Gray Drake, who just had a birthday. The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, who've been very supportive of the show and of us after the whole fire thing. Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram. The podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion
podcast
cast.
Podcast is over.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry. It is.
Done.
Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and Throwing Shade, and all the other lovely folks out there who I find so entertaining and who
you need
been
to make an actual list.
I know,
so
I know.
So you can read it instead of trying to remember all of them.
Yes, I know. But anyway, we thank all of you guys out there for plugging the show, and we thank you for listening. And this one was late this week because I was at Sundance, but we will be back on our regular schedule starting this week.
In mere days.
Indeed. So we'll catch you next time.
Bye.